Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Byrd. My name is Lamont Wilburn. I'll be interviewing. Could you please state your full name for the record?
Sure. I go by the name Ron Byrd. That's not my given name, but that's what I go by.
What's your given name, sir?
My given name was Ronald C. Byrd.
Oh, what's the C for? We got to know.
Charles.
Okay, very nice. Classic. Okay, sir. So the purpose of this interview is not to get anything that's going to be incriminating or going to hurt anyone in any or your image or anything, but it's to get your sage wisdom and knowledge and anything that you have to pass forward to the current legislators and the future legislators and talk about your time here and elaborate as you see fit, sir.
Sure. You know, I've got a lot of sage advice to give to people.
Yes.
I'd just be glad to do it.
Absolutely. Okay, so sir, we'll start off kind of how you got into this. So what led you to this lifestyle of service?
One of my very best friends who just died last week, as a matter of fact.
Sorry to hear that, sir.
And I do his memorial tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Was involved in politics. He was a labor leader and deeply involved in politics. And I was a businessman at the time, and they thought it would be a good idea to have a businessman on the labor side.
Right.
So he would bring me to meetings with him and met Ralph Yarborough. We did a movie for Ralph Yarborough whenever he ran his we did a camping video for his ad. We did lots of things like that. And ran campaigns for a mayor in San Antonio who didn't win. And then I just, I was so active in politics, the federal courts in 1972 came down and said that San Antonio or Bear County, instead of having a multiple district, it would have to have single member districts. And I was so well known in my area that everybody...
From running the campaigns and being involved in politics?
That's correct.
Okay.
And in my church group and my organizational skills.
Okay.
So they asked me to run.
People came to you directly and asked for you to represent them?
They sure did. Well, lots of people did, yes.
That's amazing.
As a matter of fact, I was in law school.
Where were you in law school at?
At St. Mary's University.
Yes, sir. Okay.
I was in law school whenever they tried to talk me into running.
Okay.
And I said no. I rejected that over and over and over again because I was dedicated to law school. Most of my peers in law school were 22 and 23-year-olds, and I was 32.
Okay. I'm in the same boat right now, sir.
And I was very frightened by it because the young, virile minds were going to give me a challenge. So I worked awfully hard.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, running for office, serving in the legislature, I had to drop out of law school or suspend my law school.
What year?
1973.
But what year were you in law school?
I was in my second term.
Oh, 2L. Okay.
So I had to suspend my time there for that session, and then I went back to law school in June and carried a full load in the summer and a full load in the fall, and graduated in December of 73. Because in 74, we started as delegates to the Texas Constitutional Convention.
Okay.
So I was always proud to say my law school dean at that time was Dean Ernie Raba. And Ernie was an interesting man. I was in his class, but Ernie kept on saying, Ron Byrd, when he was running for the legislature and when he was in the legislature, he was never in my class. Whenever we go to a meeting, he'd always ask me to come up in front of the group and say something. But every time I'd go, he'd criticize me. I look up there where he's supposed to be sitting, and he's never there. He was never there. So I don't know how he ever graduated and how he ever got through my class. So one day I asked for permission to speak and respond. And I said, Ernie, Dean, I want you to know that in the 3 years that I was in law school, I missed one day of classes. I never missed any more. I was in your class every time. I never missed your class. I came late some days, and I left early some days because of my legislative responsibilities. And he never said anything more after that.
I could imagine.
But anyway. Okay.
So your friend being a mentor and really introducing you to politics, and then the people rallying around you and lifting you up and asking you to come on. How was it after that first election when you actually got on and in your first session as a freshman, how were those issues that they asked you to champion? How did you handle that?
Well, my first session was a disaster.
Why would you say that?
Because I expected to go up there and change the world. whenever I came up here to Austin, I went home and realized after the session was over that the only thing that I had passed was a tribute to the POWs.
Hey, and that's a word, dessert.
Well, I mean, it was important to me, but absolutely. You know, I just the things that I wanted to champion, I was not successful in doing.
What were those things?
I was interested in handling some legislation for the mentally retarded,
yep.
and for people that had problems with their disabilities, and
okay.
So I didn't get a chance to do that. Fortunately, I voted for the correct speaker. And made him, because of 13 of us going over to his side on a Wednesday morning, Bill Clayton never had a chance to become speaker as of 8 o'clock Wednesday morning, but after 8:30, he had a good chance, and by 5 o'clock that evening, he was the speaker.
Right.
And so being on the right side of the speaker was very helpful because I got good committee appointments after that.
Yeah, I see. A lot of chair appointments.
And I was chairman of Judicial Affairs Committee, and I was chairman of
Regents,
Compacts, and Districts, and subcommittees, and just had lots of appointments. But I think my biggest pride was that my second term up there after legislative constitutional convention, I learned a lot. We got to sit with the senators,
mm-hmm.
and we got to know them personally. And by the time we were at the end of that constitutional convention, I had contacts that I didn't have before.
I've heard this theme before about having the two chambers speaking and how imperative that was in order to get legislation passed. How did it work for you?
Oh, it was critical. It was critical, and it was really very helpful. And there was a fellow by the name of Carlos Truon who served in the House and subsequently into the Senate. And I watched Carlos, and I sat and watched him my first session. And Carlos would come up and he would get people by the lapel at their desk and say, "Bird, we got this bill coming up, and by God, your district is about 40% Hispanic. And if you don't vote for this bill, by God, Bird, you're not going to be able to pass any legislation." You know, it's gone on and on. And I watched Carlos, and I watched a couple other successful legislators. And so in my second term, I hired some really important people, some good people. And I
to carried... your chief of staff and your legislative director?
My chief of staff and... A couple of appointees that were just really, really. One of them became a legislator here.
Who's that?
Paul. You wouldn't.
Was he your chief of staff or legislative
director?
No,
he was just he was working with me.
Okay, on your staff. So how did you pick those folks?
One of them picked me, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. My chief of staff picked me. She was a reporter for the San Antonio Light at the time. And she covered me, and she came to me, and she was probably the best reporter in San Antonio at the time. She came to me and asked me if I would like to have her come to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, her name was Ann Robinson. She was just, she was a jewel,
mm-hmm.
and she helped a lot. But I had a blackboard in my office, and each one of my staff was required to have a bill under their control. And what they would do, I had them all list up on the blackboard. I had 13 bills that I was carrying that session. And one of them was a key bill. And
what's the key bill?
I'll tell you about that
Uh-oh.
In a moment.
Okay.
But the reporters would come in and ask about the bills. And they would go on down, and they'd get down to my key bill,
mm-hmm.
and they'd ask about that. And I said, well, that's just a minor little bill that changes three words in legislation. So that's, you know, and I wouldn't say any more about it. Being a chairman at the time, I had some insight and capabilities of talking with different other committee chairmen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I passed as much legislation as anybody else that when it was signed into law that year. And the bill that was my key bill was called the escheat bill. I don't know if you know what escheat is. Back, it's a common law term. Back during the in England, whenever a person would die, whenever a lord would die, all of his holdings would go back to the crown. And then the crown, if the crown liked the family, then they would the crown, the king would give the holdings back to the person. Well, that was called escheat. And in Texas, there was a law that it was an escheat law that said every account that's in a bank, savings and loan, insurance company, credit union, whatever it might be, that is over 7 years old and they can't find the owner. They send letters to the last known address for that person, and if the letters came back and they didn't have, after 7 years, if that account was $25 or less, then they had to escheat it to the state.
Wow.
And it went into the Permanent Education Fund. My simple little bill just removed three words, less than $25. And so anyway, I was able to pass it in the House, even though the bankers didn't like it. Savings and loan people didn't like it. Credit unions didn't like it. But due to circumstances that, I wrote an article about this.
Oh, wow.
It was published on several occasions. But and it passed the House, passed the Senate, and then Governor Dolph Frisco at that time, I'd already had, you know, five or six bills signed into law, and his chief aide came to me and he said, Representative Byrd, are you available Tuesday? And I said, yes. And he said, well, and he said, the governor's going to veto your escheat bill. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, the governor said, you know, he's a banker, and his banker friends don't like that bill, so he's going to veto that. And I said, well, that's fine. That's fine. I said, he said, you've got a lot of bills that have been passed, and he signed into law. We'll sign more into law for you. And I said, well, that's fine. I said, are you going to be available at 10 o'clock on Monday? And he said, well, sure, Representative Byrd, anything for you. And I said, well, he said, what are we going to be doing? I said, we're going to meet on the Capitol steps. I'm going to have a news conference. Oh, and he said, what's your news conference about? I said, well, I'm going to acknowledge to the press that you told me that Governor Briscoe is going to veto my bill because it affects the bankers adversely. And he's a banker. And so there was silence. he called me later that day, and he said, Representative Byrd, can you be in the governor's office Tuesday? He's going to sign two of your bills. One of them is the escheat bill.
Wow, very nice.
And so whenever I wrote the article, I contacted the comptroller's office. Mm-hmm. This was 5 years ago. That was passed in 1975. And so 5 years ago, I contacted the comptroller's office and asked the comptroller's office how much money had come into as a result of my bill. And they said, well, we can't tell you. And I said, well, okay. So I filed an open records request. And about a month later, I got the report back, and my eyes popped, and my mouth fell open. $3 billion had come into the state. That was money that had been these banks, savings and loans, insurance companies, credit unions, all of them, had been using that money. They couldn't take it to themselves for their own money. But they were using that money and lending it out and making money on it.
And the interest.
And so, wow. And I don't know how much more since that time, but that was 5 years ago.
Wow, that's
but
amazing.
I was, you know, I thought, you know, millions, 2 or 3 million, but things.
Billion.
Over $3 billion.
Wow.
And I told the House here that they screwed me on that too, because later on they came in and my money was all that money was supposed to go to the Permanent Education Fund. Mm-hmm. Whenever they saw how much money was coming in, they changed the law and had to go into the general fund. Mm. So, which was an unfair thing to do.
Right.
Another one of my favorite things, Representative Ben Z. Grant from Marshall, Texas, and I had a lot of fun. We passed and made chili the state dish of Texas. Mm-hmm. And we had one of the best parties that you've ever seen over at Zilker Park.
Oh, nice.
And we had thousands of people. I think every university student came because we had free beer, we had free chili, and all sorts of free things over there. We tried to make it we had people from Guinness World Records, and we were hoping that we were going to get the biggest pot of chili. Mm-hmm. Well, the representative from Guinness said, we'd like to say that it was the biggest pot of chili, but he said it was a trough instead of a pot.
A pot.
So we can't do that. And so one of the press interviewed my co-sponsor, Ben Grant, and said, well, now what do you got here? And he said, well, we had 100 pounds of meat, and we had that barrel over there full of spices, and that green garden hose full of water. And so we had a paddle that we were stirring it
with.
Oh,
wow.
But it was a great party. And as a matter of interest, you know, one of the best beers for people in Texas and around the country is Shiner beer now.
Absolutely.
Back then, Shiner beer was not very popular. Mm-hmm. And we had all the beer lobbyists, had all of the beer people come and bring, they had galvanized trash cans full of beer with ice in them. At the end of the evening, all the beer was gone except for the Shiner.
Wow.
Nobody was drinking Shiner beer back
right.
then. But now, you know, it's the thing, so.
Okay, so you had a sheet bill, then you made the chili, the state food of Texas.
That's right.
And then what was another more serious bill that you had that had a lot of contention? Maybe it didn't pass, but you championed the effort.
Well, there were most of the. I carried a lot of water bills.
Okay.
That improved the water standards in Texas. I did a lot of had a lot of local bills for San Antonio that I passed. I was interested in historic preservation, so I helped pass some legislation for San Antonio.
The Alamo, or
for just what? All of San Antonio.
Okay, all of San Antonio.
Yeah, all of San Antonio. Okay. So we would take. You ever been to a night in old San Antonio?
I have not.
Have you?
No, I can't say.
It's one of the biggest parties in the state.
When does that happen?
It's right now.
Okay.
It's Tuesdays through Friday, I think. Next Tuesday through Friday.
Gotta go.
It's a party. I mean, it's wall to wall people. But I would get the lobbyists to get a bus, and we would take two buses one time, a busload of legislators down there. And you know, have one party, one
right.
big party. They just loved it, and it was always made my possibilities of getting the legislation passed a lot easier.
Right. So that was my next question. So you've been chairman of several committees, and you've had successful legislation passed. I don't know if I would call it inside baseball, but what tips and tricks did you have that you could pass on to future legislators?
I just made my statement out to the group out here.
Yes, sir.
My first term, mm-hmm. I was up on the front microphone, and the speaker's podium is behind, you know,
right.
behind it. And so I was up there, and I was promoting one of my bills for retarded people, which, you know, I was really interested in giving it everything I had. And a fellow by the name of Greg Montoya, legislator, was standing behind me with his elbow up on the speaker's podium, and he was chirping and tweeting real loud, you know.
Making the sound with his mouth.
Like a bird, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I'd look around, I'd trying to look around at him, and he kept on chirping and tweeting, And I was furious because it was distracting.
Right, and you had a serious bill that you were presenting.
Yeah, well, my bill failed when the board was read.
Oh, wow.
At the end of the day, whenever I got down. But I was heading back to my chair, and I was going to put my folder down, and I was going to go looking for Greg and just give him a piece of my mind.
Right.
This was, you know, that was just distracting, and it was not professional, and it shouldn't have done that.
Right.
On my way back, Fred Agnich, who was one of the 17 Republicans at that time, 133 Democrats and 17
wow.
Republicans. And as I was walking by Fred's chair, his desk, he stopped me and he said, wait a minute. He said, you know Mad Dog Mingdon? And I said, I've heard of him. And he said, you're really a lucky son of a gun.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, his Mad Dog Mingdon was really a abusive kind of guy. And whenever he got up to talk, everybody would start barking like a dog or howling like a dog. And he said, you've got the greatest thing going for you. And I said, well, why is it good that they're chirping and tweeting for me? He said, mark my word. He said, mark my word. He says, you're going to find out that you're going to pass legislation because they're going to be so busy chirping and tweeting that they won't know what they're voting on. Well, the next time I was on the front mic passing something or trying to pass something is I walked back to my desk, a couple of the legislators stopped me. What was it we just voted on?
Oh, no, after they had already voted.
Yeah, they're chirping and tweeting, you know.
So as soon as you got up there, they would start chirping.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as they say, Representative Byrd.
It sounded like an aviary. I mean, it was the coolest thing. And it was a great help to me because I passed a lot of bills maybe that I wouldn't have.
Very nice. So that was your on-the-floor tactic. That was your ground tactic. So now, behind the scenes when you were making deals, what kind of strategy did you use and anything you could pass on from those tactics?
Well, my sheet bill, we had the speaker would always have us up on a Sunday.
Okay.
And we would have either... All the chairmen.
Okay.
We would either have breakfast or lunch or dinner on a Sunday before the session started on Monday. And at that session, we would discuss what was going to transpire during the week. And they're doing the same thing now, I'm sure.
Right.
That's a routine I think everybody follows.
Right.
And my cheat bill was in, I can't remember the name of the committee, but Nub Donaldson was the chairman of that committee. And Nub came up to me, and I had asked him to put my bill on the calendar, on his calendar so they could vote on it. And he said, Byrd, he said, I can't do that. And so this went on for a couple of meetings. And finally he came up to me, he said, hey, he said, I got a bill in your committee and I haven't gotten a hearing on it yet. And I said, oh, gee, what's that number, Nub? And he told me, I said, oh, gosh, yes. I said, I got some constituents. I don't think they want to see that bill. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see that bill on our calendar. So he said, come on. He said, that's really important to me. I said, well, I'll tell you what. I said, as soon as you set my cheat bill, I will set your bill. And
quid pro quo.
So he set the cheat bill, and he came up to me, and he said, I'm setting it for next Tuesday. And he said, a week from Tuesday. And he said, I promise you, he said, it's not going to go anywhere. He said, because I know the bankers have already talked to me about it. Savings and loan people have talked to me about it. Credit union people have talked to me about it. Insurance companies have talked to me about it. He said, it's not going anywhere. So instead of that, whenever I showed up for that hearing, before that, I went and talked to some of the committee members, some of his committee members,
right.
And buttonholed them, this is what's coming up.
Right.
I need your vote. Can you do that? And I had commitments from almost half of the committee, which all you needed was a majority. But there were a couple of them that said, if we don't have any really adverse witnesses coming up and testifying, I will be with you. But otherwise, if some of these people come up that I'm depending on their support for, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm sorry. But I said, okay. So we got there, and it was in the House chambers instead of in their committee room. And when we got there, the House chambers was packed. All the banking lobbyists, all the people were
Everyone
there.
Came up.
And so he had my bill second. And so whenever I got up, I was very brief. I just said, this is a cheap bill. I said, the only thing it does, it removes three words from the bill, from the current legislation. And I said, it really shouldn't have much of an impact on anybody, which was a tale. But I sat down, and the speaker said, Nub Donaldson said, anybody else here to speak in favor of the bill? Nobody responded. Okay, who's going to speak in opposition to the bill? Nobody spoke in opposition.
Wow.
I found out later on that the reason that they didn't speak at that committee hearing against it is because there was some more serious legislation that they felt was going to be more adverse to them.
Right.
And so they didn't want
to save
be
it.
Against everything, and this, right. they're going
to
let this one go through. Well, the same thing happened in the Senate when I got over there, and it was on the consent calendar both times. You know what the consent calendar
Absolutely.
Is? Absolutely. It was on the consent calendar both times.
Wow.
And it passed.
Very nice.
So anyway, those are my stories.
Okay. So, sir, you seem very well informed about things that are going on now. Are there any issues that you currently see in the in the 85th or 84th and that parallel some of the issues that you encountered while you were here?
One thing that, I'm glad you asked that, because one thing that really pisses me off.
What is it?
Pisses me off royally is that there's a bill mm-hmm. in committee now mm-hmm. that is trying to make tacos the state dish instead
yeah,
of chili.
How did I know you were going to say
that? That just truly pisses me off.
Breakfast tacos are a big hit now here.
Yeah, saying. But chili is, chili is Texas. We had
right.
chili queens in front of the Alamo
that's
back, 100 years ago. So.
That's true.
So anyway, that's so.
Okay, but so any sage advice for the folks now as to how things should go as far as bipartisan politics or interchamber relations or anything that you could bestow upon them, you could leave and memorialize with them?
Let me just tell you that I think that Washington has arrived in Austin.
Oh, and what do you mean by that, sir?
There was congeniality whenever I was there in
okay.
the 70s.
Popularity contest?
I'm sorry?
Popularity contest?
No, not at all. No, not that way. No, I mean, everybody could speak together.
We
trusted each other.
Right,
we had
right.
confidence in
okay.
each other. We knew whenever somebody winked at you that it was that they
Genius.
Knew that they were telling you something that was wrong.
Gotcha.
And you could go and sit and have a beer with them or a
right.
cocktail with them in the evening or eat a pizza
uh-huh.
or go to Schultz's, or
right.
wherever. That's not the case now.
Okay.
And, if you can't get back to that, Republicans are finding Republicans and Democrats, poor things.
They're lost in the fray.
They're dying on the vine. So,
right.
My advice is, be more friendly with each other.
Okay.
Don't be so critical of each other. It's not going to happen.
Right.
I mean, Washington has arrived in Austin.
Okay.
So.
And so since Washington has arrived in Austin, what role do you think the state of Texas now plays on the national scene moving forward with the legislation that we have now?
Let me just say this. Whenever I got out of the legislature in 1981,
mm-hmm.
I divorced myself from politics.
Okay.
And I follow national politics
uh-huh.
now. I don't follow state politics.
Okay.
So the only thing I know is that I'm pissed off about
that,
about
that breakfast burrito.
Yeah.
that's good yeah. stuff, sir. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing all your stories with us and your infinite wisdom, sir. It's been a pleasure.
Glad to
if
do
If there's
that.
Anything you have to close it out with and leave with everyone, not the taco, though, because that's a fan favorite.
Not a thing. I just I'm just sorry to see things in the disarray that they are right now. And nobody's going to change that. I'm not going to change it. You're not going to change it. You're not going to change it. They can only change it.
Right.
And that doesn't appear like it's going to happen.
We're hopeful, though. We're hopeful that those.
Well, we can be hopeful.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for your time.